Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, 6 lines from the top at the Mishnah. You can see the first word of the Mishnah, Kosherin, indicates we are continuing to deal with the topic of the Perek, the issue of making knots. And as we've learned already, that on Shabbos, one is forbidden to make a permanent knot. However, a knot that is made with the intent of undoing it would not be considered in the realm of an Iser Melacha D'oraisa. And hence you see allowances made for other kinds of knots that are not permanent. The Mishnah, Kosherin Dli Bepiskia, one can tie a pail, and the tying of the pail is in order to lower it into a pit in order to draw water from a well. So one can tie a pail to a piskia. Piskia is a wide belt. And we've seen this expression in a previous Gemara as well. Avol lo bechevel. However, one cannot tie the pail to a rope. The reason for that is that when you tie the pail to the rope, you might just leave it like that, leave it tied for a long time. And that would be a kesher shel kayom, a permanent knot, and hence forbidden. Rabbi Yehuda matir. And Rabbi Yehuda allows. We'll have to find out what does that mean he allows, when after all, he wouldn't allow something that's a Torah-level prohibition. Klal Omar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says a rule. Kol kesher she'eno shel kayoma ein chayoven olav. Any knot that's not of a permanent nature, one would not be chayev, one would not be guilty. The Gemara asks, chevel demai. What kind of chevel are they arguing about? On the side of our Gemara, we've assigned a topic heading, Kshiras Chevel Lidli, the issue of tying a rope to a pail. That's the general topic here. And the immediate topic that we'll be dealing with is, what is the basis of the machlokes between Rebbe Yehuda and the Rabbanon? So the Gemara asks, Chevel Demai, what kind of rope are they arguing about? Ilem o Chevel di Almal, if you were to think we're talking about a general type of rope, then Rabbi Yehuda Matir, would you say that Rabbi Yehuda would allow that? Kesher Shel Kayomu, it's a permanent knot, and he said explicitly in the Mishnah that a permanent knot is forbidden. Elo Bechevel de Gardi. Rather, it's a rope used in the weaving process. And that kind of rope, one will not leave attached to a pail. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda sees it as being grounds for a leniency. The Gemara asks, Lememra de Rabbonon Safri, Gazrinon Chevel de Gardi, Otu Chevel de Amov, Rabbi Yehuda, Sovar lo gazrinon? Are you suggesting that Rabbi Yehuda is lenient and he does not make a gzeira, he doesn't make a prohibition concerning a weaver's rope in anticipation of a standard rope, and the Chachamim are stringent and they do impose a gzeira, a ruling that proscribes the use of a chevel de gardi in anticipation of someone actually using a regular rope? Well, that brings us to a contradiction. V'raminu, we raise a stira, a contradiction, from the following source. Chevel d'li shenifsak lo yehe kosher elo onvo. Here is the Tanakama. The Chachomim are saying a rope attached to a pail that snapped, don't tie it, but you can make a bow. Why are you not allowed to tie it? That would be a kesher shel kayama. That would be a permanent knot. But you are allowed to make a bow. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Korech Olov Punda Opiskia Ubilvad Shelo Ya'advenu. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, you can wrap around it these materials, Punda or Piskia. Rashi says a Punda is an Azor Cholul or a Piskia, and he gives you a French word for that, but we saw already the word Piskia in the Mishnah, which we mentioned was an Azor Rochav, a wide belt. So Rabbi Yehuda gives the option of wrapping around the severed rope a hollow type belt or a wide belt, but that would sort of would bond the it would keep together for the time being the two sections of rope that snapped, or you're simply tying the pail to one of these things, or let's say wrapping the pail around wrapping these things around the pail. The main thing is ubavat shelo yavenu. Rashi says what one shall not make a bow in the rope. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda is stringent. The Chachomim were not restricting the Anifa. They said you can make the bow. Rabbi Yehuda is restrictive. Kashid Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda. Kashid Rabbonah, Rabbonah. This poses a contradiction to the way we saw the Shitos presented before, where the Chachomim were restrictive and Rabbi Yehuda was lenient. That is the end of the long question that we featured with our markings at the to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see we had a kuf that was encircled with a descending vertical dashed line ending at this point. The kuf represents a kushya, a question. And the question is this contradiction. So the Gemara answers, derabbanan ad rabbanan lo kashya. There is no contradiction per se in the rabbanan. Chevel b'chevel michlif. The possibility of a person confusing ropes is a reality. Therefore, they restrict the use of the chevel de gardi in anticipation of your coming to use a regular rope and knotting it. So they allow even the chevel de gardi. Aniva b'kshira lo michlefa. However, by allowing one to make a bow, they are not fearful that one will confuse that with making a knot. A bow is allowed, a knot is not allowed. So we allow you to make the bow and are not fearful of someone coming to confuse that with a knot. Therefore, when in the source that we more recently saw in the frame that we drew into the Gemara, we dashed underline Ella Onvo, that is because you won't confuse that with a serious problem. So we allow you to do the Aniva. As far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, there is no contradiction. Hosam lo mishum de michlefo aniva bekshira. That which Rabbi Yehuda prohibits the making of the bow is not because of fear that if we allow the bow, you will come to making a knot. Elo aniva gufo kshira hi. The aniva, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, presents a problem of kosher, of making a knot. It's the same thing from his perspective. Therefore, in general, Rabbi Yehuda does not make a gzera, and therefore he'll allow the chevel de gardi as we saw before. His ban, his restriction on the aniva is because the aniva is itself problematic. Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rabbi Bar Ashi, Omar Rav, Mevi Odom Chevel Mitoch Beso, V'Koshro B'Poro U'Be'Evus. Evus is a stall, a feeding area where an animal eats. So the halacha that's taught here in the name of Rav is a person can bring from his house a rope and tie it to the animal on the one end of the rope, and to the avus, to the feeding stall or the feeding trough on the other end. Esve Rabbi Acho Aricho, Duhu Rabbi Acho Bar Popo, the Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Acho Aricho presents a problem to Rabbi Abba. Chevel Shebe Avus Koshro Beporo, the chevel that's attached to the feeding trough, you can tie it to the cow. The rope that's tied to the cow, you can tie it, the other end, to the feeding trough. Provided that you don't bring a rope from your house and tie it one end to the cow and the other end to the feeding trough. So you can see that through the markings, certainly we have a squiggle line here, shelo, and dashed underline, shelo yovi chevel mitoch beso. Contrast this with Rav's statement just a couple lines before, where we dashed the line where he says, mevi chevel mitoch beso. The Gemara answers, hosam chevel di ama, hocha chevel di gardi. The prohibition in the Tanaic source just quoted was a standard rope. That's forbidden. That which Rav allowed is a chevel degardi, which we saw before, in line with Rebbe Yehuda, he allowed that and didn't make exera. As we go on in the Gemara, we're going to notice some double underlining and diamonds. So on the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei heading, the Nosei Mivneh heading, Nosei is the topic heading, and the Mivneh is the structural note. We've noted kli kiwi appears in a diamond. These are kli organ. These are vessels used by weavers. And the double underline highlights gimel deos beinyan tiltul kovet elyon vekovet tachton. Three opinions regarding the movement on Shabbos of these kovet. Kovet is a beam, elyon an upper one, and tachton a lower one. And Rashi, in explaining this, once again presents a French word, which means beams that are used by the weaver that the shti strings are attached. So as we've said in the past, to really appreciate many, many sugyas in Masechet Shabbos, illustrations are needed. And unfortunately, we don't provide in Gemara markings very many of those, but there are books and svarim and editions of Gemara on the market where one can see these things illustrated. So in the meantime, we continue with the Gemara. And Rashi points out that the reason we're speaking about moving kli orgim, the vessels of weavers, is because we mentioned chevel de gardi. And the chevel de gardi, gardi is a weaver, so it's a, we were discussing before, a weaver's rope. And in anticipation, or as a result of that, so we're getting a bit off the topic now and dealing with the movement of other weavers' utensils and devices. The Gemara. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, kli kiwi, and we say kli kiwi are vessels used by weavers, mutter letavalon b'Shabbos. It is mutter to move them around on Shabbos, for a non-weaving purpose, but for some other Shabbos-related purpose. And Rashi adds some important information. He says, mutter letavalon b'shnei hakonim, the two reeds or poles, litashmish achir, for another use. Viashmeinen, and we are told the ein gardi makbil aleihem, that the weaver himself isn't upset if you use it for some purpose other than weaving. V'lo havi melachton leiser, that phrase requires some further investigation. But literally it means that they are not considered vessels that are specified for prohibited use. So we now continue in the Gemara with Rav Yehuda's statement, in the name of Shmuel, the kli kiwi mutter letalton, bo minei me Rav Yehuda. The question was asked of Rav Yehuda, kovet ha'elyon v'kovet ha'tachton mahu, what about moving these beams that we mentioned before in the Rashi, that mentioned that used a French word to explain the beams that are attached to the threads being woven. Can you move them? In velav v'rafio biyodei. Sometimes he wanted to say yes, sometimes he wanted to say no, but the answer was elusive to him. And as Rashi explains, refui hoisa Hachuva befiv im leesor im lahatir. It was refuia, literally means loose. Means he wasn't. It wasn't secure. He wasn't secure with an answer in either direction. The Gemara continues, Itmar, Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel. Here you have another version of Shmuel. This is presented by Rav Nachman. Kli kiwi, mutter letatalon b'shabbos. Afilu kovet ha'ilyon v'kovet ha'tachton. Here he takes a position. This version of Shmuel has, and that's brought by Rav Nachman, says that it's mutter to move the weaver's vessels, including the kovet ha'ilyon and that kovet ha'tachton. Avoloi es ho'amudim. But not the amudim. Rashi explains, again, using a French word, he says what they are, and it's oisum hamenukovos she'orgin bohen hanoshim. Whatever the case is, the amudim are not allowed. And now we have a bracketed section. In the brackets, the Gemara delves into the issue of the amudim. But after the brackets, we have a bracket length indicator to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see a vertical dash dotted line, and on the right-hand side of the Gemara text, you can try to find where the number, the diamond number 3 is, and you can see another presentation of the issue of the Kli Kiwi. On the side, we have a double star, which is an attempt to explain why we bracketed the Gemara. Let's read the note. He'ora, tam, Lesograim, the reason for the brackets, Diesh Lahavlit Meirosh, the our purpose is to point out at the outset, Gimel Deos, Visyachsis, the Kovet Elyon, the Kovet Tachton, three different approaches to the issue of the Kovet Elyon and the Kovet Tachton, Vachach Lachso, the Toichen, Hachelika Memuzgar, and then to go back to the bracketed section. So now that we've done that, we can skip the brackets for a moment, and we skip down. You see, Bormine Rabbi Yochan Rabbi Yudib Rabbi Loi, Kli Kiyui Kuguin Kuvit Ilion Vekuvit Atach Mal Tatla B'Shabbos. What about moving these elements? Omale, so Rabbi Yudib Bar Levoi answers, Ein Metaltalin. You're not allowed to move them. Now, with our markings, we can easily scan the three shitas regarding the Kovet Elyon Tachton, and we had the first approach was no position on it, in velav rafi biyodei. The second approach is they are allowed. The third approach is they are not allowed. Now, we go to the bracketed section. Omar le rovo le Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman just got finished saying that the Kovet Elyon and Kovet Tachton are allowed, but not the Amudim. So Rava asks Rav Nachman, Maishna Amudim Delo? Why is it that the Amudim cannot be moved? Ilemo de Kovet Gumois. If it's because by picking up the Amudim are poles that were part of the weaving apparatus, and by lifting them up, you would be forming a hole in the ground on which they were set. So is that your fear, that by picking the poles up, you're going to be leaving a hole in the ground? You have to imagine for a moment that the poles were kept on a dirt floor in a house. So by picking up the poles, you're going to be forming a hole. If that is what's worrying you, that's not a problem. Humos memelo kohavion. You're not actually digging the hole out. You're picking up the pole and with the absence of the pole in the floor, so a hole is left. And that is not a problem. This non, the following source will bear this out. Now, the following source has though it's not a long source, it touches on numerous topics. In the context of our Daf Yomi Shir, we're not going to delve into each one of the topics, actually four topics that are alluded to. We want to focus on the dashed underlined section that you see at the end of this framed source, where it says V'nitlin B'Shabbos. That is what's important for us right now. So the source says, HaToymei Lefes Utsnonos Tachas HaGefen. One who, Tomein is literally to hide or to bury. These are different kinds of vegetables, lefes and snonos, under a vine. Im mikza, so he's, imagine for our purposes, just for illustrative purposes, taking a bunch of radishes. And the radishes have leaves that grow forth from their tops. The radish is a type of bulb that grows in the ground, and leaves emerge above the ground. So he is putting a bunch of ready-to-eat radishes in the ground under a vine for, we'll say, for safekeeping. Im miktas olov migulin, if part of the leaves are visible, eino choshesh, he doesn't have to worry about lo mishum kilayim, he doesn't have to worry that it's a tantamount to mix breeding the vine, the grapes with the radishes. He's putting it there for storage purposes, and that's not a problem of mixed breeding of kilayim. Velo mishum shvius, and he's not going to be in violation of shvius, of the prohibition of doing agricultural activity on the seventh year, the sabbatical year. And number three, velo mishum meiser, that means when he wants to pull these radishes out from under the vine, he doesn't have to tithe them again. They were already tithed. V'nitlin b'Shabbos, and this is what's of importance for us. They can be removed from under the vines on Shabbos. Ah, you'll say, but a hole will result. So you see from here that the resultant hole doesn't bother us. The Gemara answers, the case of the vegetables under the vine is different than the case of the amudim, the poles of the weaver in the house. In a field, when a hole is left under a vine, there's no fear of the owner smoothing out the hole and leveling the ground. Hocha, babayas, here in the case of the amudim, there is a fear that the owner might come to smooth out the floor of his house. That would be a reasonable thing for a person to do during the weekday. Just so happens on Shabbos that is prohibited. It's a form of bone of building. Therefore, that's why Rav Nachman said you can't pick up the amudim from the dirt floor in the house, because a hole will result, and that will be too much of a temptation to the owner to smooth out the hole. And smoothing out the hole, as we said, is forbidden to do on Shabbos. That fear doesn't exist when pulling out the radishes from under the vine, even if it happens to be on Shabbos. Rabbi Yochanan asks, Kli kiwi kagon kovid ha'ilyon v'kovid ha'tachton mal v'tafelin b'Shabbos, these weaver utensils, including the kovid ha'ilyon and kovid ha'tachton, can you move them around on Shabbos? Amale, ein metafelin, you're not allowed to move them. My matam, why not? Lefi she'ein nitlin. Rashi explains, Lefi she'ein nitlin af b'chol, even during the weekdays, a person doesn't take apart his weaver, his weaving setup, in order to move these things. And Rashi says, af b'chol mitnei koivlon, these are heavy elements, heavy utensils. Hilkoch kol malachton lekach, since they're very heavy, and a person even during the weekday doesn't move them around for other reasons, it's something that is not used for anything else, and therefore what we saw before in the Rashi, who was explaining the opinion that allowed it, by saying that the gardi is not makbid, and therefore their malacha is not for something prohibited, according to this approach, since a person doesn't use it for anything else, so it's restricted to weaving, and therefore one is not allowed to move them on Shabbos. The Mishnah. Mekaplin es hakelim afilu arbo'o v'chamisho pa'omim. The Mishnah here deals with the folding of clothing. Now, the spirit of this is that the folding of clothing is something that helps to preserve them, which you see in the Rashi's expression of tikkun on Shabbos in general. The behavior or actions that are tikkun would be prohibited. Tikkun can also mean where you're fixing something or improving something. Here, the Mishnah says, you can fold clothing, even afilu arba v'chamisha pamim, even 4 or 5 times, if your intention is to wear them again. In other words, you take off the article of clothing, fold it because, let's say, you're going to go to sleep, going to be in a position where ordinarily you wouldn't wear that article of clothing, and then you will unfold it and wear it later in the day. So you can repeat this even several times. Rashi adds some information here. Mekaplen es hakelim. The word kelim usually means vessels, but here it's begodim, clothing. Kishaposhton, when he takes them off, mekaplen b'nei she misrakhin mikibusan, by folding it, you soften it from after the wash. It sometimes assumes a coarse or a hardened feel to it, so by folding it you're softening it. U miskamtim kisheinam mikupolim, and if you don't fold them, so they will develop creases. So the folding helps to preserve them in a nice form. So that is a chiddush, that's allowed on Shabbos. The Mishnah continues, umatzin es mitos. The concept of matzin es mitos is to what we would say to prepare a bed with its different elements of bedding, the sheets, the pillowcases, it's the setting up of the bed with its relevant elements. So one is allowed to make the bed, umatzin es hamitos milele Shabbos l'Shabbos. That means on Shabbos night, Friday night, if one is going to set up his bed with the sheetings for use on Shabbos day, that would be okay. Avolo mi Shabbos l'motzoi Shabbos. One would not be allowed to make the bed, to set up the beddings from Shabbos for the purpose of Saturday night. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, mekaplen es hakelim umatzien es hamitos miyom hakipurim leShabbos. You can fold the clothing and make the beds on Yom Kippur for Shabbos. V'chelvei Shabbos kraven biyom hakipurim avolo shel yom hakipurim b'Shabbos. The Tanakhama says that the innards of Shabbos korbonos, the chelvei, are the innards of sacrifices that are to be offered on the Mizbeach. In the event that you had Shabbos sacrifices, and there are Shabbos sacrifices offered in the Beis HaMikdash, and they didn't have a chance to burn the innards of those korbanos, of those sacrifices, so the Tanakhama says that they can be burnt on Yom Kippur, which falls out on the next day, on Sunday. In other words, as Shabbos leaves, Yom Kippur enters. So you have the Yom Kippur starting on Saturday night. However, the reverse situation, if you have Yom Kippur on a Friday, and you have Yom Kippur sacrifices, the innards of which you haven't yet offered, so those cannot be burnt on Shabbos, on the altar. Rabbi Akiva Oimer, loy shel Shabbos kraven b'yom kippurim. On this point you can see that Rabbi Akiva disagrees with the Tanakhama, that you cannot offer Shabbos korbanos innards on Yom Kippur, v'lo shel Yom Kippurim kraven b'Shabbos. On this point there is agreement that you cannot offer Yom Kippur innards on Shabbos. The Gemara now focuses on the issue of kippul begonim, on the folding of clothing. Amri debe rabianai, lo shonu elo be'odom echad, avol b'shnei b'nei odom lo. The heter, the allowance of folding the clothing, is if one person is doing it, but not where two people are folding an article of clothing together. With two people doing it, there'll be more tension on the fabric than there'll be, in effect, smoothing out the creases, and it looks like they are mesaking, they are improving the garment. As we go on in the Gemara, you might notice we have some small numbers between the lines 1, 2, 3, and 4. There are four points of qualification that the Gemara makes with regard to the heter of kippul begadim. So the first qualification is we'll make an allowance if one person is doing it and not two. Number two, uba'odim echad nami lo amarin ela bechadoshim, afal biyishonim lo. The allowance is, even with one person, is when you're dealing with new clothing and not with clothing that have already been worn. Yeshana means old clothing. In the case of the old clothing, Rashi says, so the creases and the folds in them are preserved better than in the case of new clothing. Rashi says, Yeshanim kipulon misaklan yoser, the folding of them is a more significant form of improvement, more than yoser minachadoshim. Shachadoshim koshim me'aleihem, the new clothing are somewhat firm to begin with. The ein mimarin likmod, and they don't crease so quickly. So since they don't crease so quickly, your folding of them doesn't smooth out the creases. However, old clothing that are quite creased, the folding of them will help to smooth out the creases, and that is usur on Shabbos, because that's a form of tikkun. The Gemara continues, v'chadoshim nami lo amoron, elo b'lavonim. The allowance we make for folding of new clothing is only if they are white, avol b'tzvuim lo, but colored ones, the allowance is not in place. You don't have an allowance if they're new colored clothing. V'lo amoran elo she'en lo lahachlif, and the heter is only if he has no other clothing to wear that day. Avol yesh lo lahachlif, if he has a wardrobe, he has other clothing, then loy, then we don't allow the individual to fold even new white clothing. On the side, you can see where our double star is found. We just made a summary of lesikum, summary, heter kippul, the allowance of folding is odom echad beged chodosh lovon v'ein lo lahachlif. One person folding a new white article of clothing in the event that he has no other, he doesn't have a change of clothing. The Gemara continues. Tana, shel beis Rav Gamliel lo hayu mekaplin klei lovon shelahen, in the home, in the household of Rav Gamliel, he was the leader of the Jewish people of his time, he was the Nasi. They didn't fold white clothing, but they had a change of clothing. They had other clothing that they could wear. So there was no need for them to attempt to preserve the smoothness of these clothing. The Gemara continues with a topic that we have featured on the side under our No Say heading. Shinuyim lechvoy Shabbos al pi haposuk in Yeshaya nunches perik nunches posuk yud gimel. Tomorrow we'll speak about the need to make changes in honor of Shabbos based on a posuk that's found there in Yeshaya. The posuk in its entirety we have written on the side, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. We turn to the Gemara. Amar Rav Huna, im yesh lo lahachlif yachlif. If a person has a change of clothing from his weekday clothing to and he has weekday clothing and Shabbos clothing, so he is expected to change, not wear his weekday clothing on Shabbos. Vim ein lo lahachlif, if he doesn't have a change of clothing, then yishalshel bivigodov, his weekday clothing he should lower on his body. He should lower them, Rashi says, klapei mato, downwards. They should appear long. A person who is wealthy will tend to wear long clothing, being that he doesn't have to work in the fields. A person who is not wealthy needs to work in the fields, and thereby needs to raise his clothing. So on Shabbos, when no one is engaged in any activity, in any let's say work nature activity, so even the poor man is supposed to give the impression of his being a man of wealth in honor of Shabbos, and he accomplishes that by lowering his clothing. The Gemara continues, Maskif lo Rav Safra, v'ho mischazi keramus rucha. Does it not appear as if he is haughty? Here you have a person that is otherwise not wealthy, creating an impression of wealth. Ramus rucha means high spirit, which in our context would mean haughtiness. The Gemara answers, Kevan de chol yoyim lo kovid, since every other day, weekdays, he doesn't do this, for idna hu de kovid, and only today, on Shabbos, he does that, he lowers his clothing, lo mischazi karamas rucha, he will not be casting an impression, creating an impression of haughtiness. We continue in the Gemara with the pasuk we alluded to earlier from Yeshaya. Before we read the Gemara, let's look at the side of the Gemara, where the inside margin where we've written the entire pasuk Yeshaya, Perek Nunches, Pasuk Yugimel. The pasuk says, Im Toshiv Mishabos Raglecho, Asos Chafotzecho Biyom Kodshi. If you restrict your feet from doing your own needs on my holy day, V'korosu L'Shabbos Oineg, you proclaim Shabbos a day of enjoyment, L'Kedosh Hashem, in honor of the Almighty, V'chubod, and you honor the Almighty and His Shabbos from tending to your own needs and from speech. That's as far as an attempt to offer a literal translation to the pasuk. Now let's see how this is applied. The Gemara, v'chibadeto me'asos d'rochecha. V'chibadeto, what does that mean? We've underlined the different parts of the pasuk that the Gemara wants to darshan. Shelo yehei malbushcha shel Shabbos ke malbushcha shel chol. From the word v'chibadeto, which literally means honor it, we're told that your weekday clothing should not be the same as your Shabbos clothing. V'chihad Rabbi Yochanan kor lemoni mechabdusi. And this is in line with Rabbi Yochanan, who would refer to clothing as using the word mechabdusai, meaning the clothing, a person's clothing, honor the individual. Meaning, if you see a person wearing clothing of distinction, so you will honor the one who's wearing it just that much more. The clothing are a source of honor. The pasuk says, Me'asos d'rochecha, Shaloyhei luchecha shel Shabbos ki lucho shel chol. The way you walk on Shabbos should not be the way that you walk during the weekdays. Tomorrow we'll get back to that later, because in the superficial sense, how can you, however you walk, you walk. How do you make a change in that? The pasuk says, Mimtzo cheftzecha. What does that tell us? Cheftzecha asurin cheftzei shemai mutarin. Tending to your own business needs, looking at your property to see what it needs, that one should not do on Shabbos. However, money-related matters that are of a mitzvah nature, chepsei shemayim means literally the needs of heaven, but it means something of a mitzvah nature, one would be allowed to engage in on Shabbos. For example, if a person wants to levy a tax on the public for supporting the poor, we call that stoka. Poskin stoka, Rashi says, that's levying a stoka tax on the public. Or another example Rashi gives is Mishadchim al Tinokis Lores, where people discuss how much they are going to pay toward the wedding of their children. That being that the wedding of children is a mitzvah, so speaking about money matters, financial matters that lead to the wedding of a new couple, this would be allowed on Shabbos. The Daber Dovar, the Gemara continues on Omid Beis, Shelo Ye Diburcha Shel Shabbos Kediburcha Shel Chol. Your speech on Shabbos should be different than your speech during the weekdays. Rashi's example of that is that you shouldn't speak business matters on Shabbos. Tosfos says, but that was already included in the previous drasha, in Minso Chetzecha. So Rabbeinu Tam says, and he quotes the Medrash, and let's look together at the Tosfos, in the middle of the Tosfos, where he quotes from the Vayikra Rabba that Reb Shimon ben Yochai Havile Imo Safta. Reb Shimon Yochai had a mother who was an older woman, Dehavis Mishtaya Sagish. She spoke a lot. She was very talkative. Omar Lo, Reb Shimon Yochai said to his mother, Imo Shabbato Hu, today is Shabbos. It's all he said to her, is that today is Shabbos. Shoska, and she kept quiet. Mashma, from this it appears she'ein kol kach l'daber b'Shabbos kamo b'chol, that on Shabbos one should speak less than he would during the weekdays. Yerushalmi amrinon, and in the Yerushalmi it says b'toruch hitiru b'sheila shalom b'Shabbos. It's with difficulty we even allow greeting people on Shabbos. The Gemara continues. Dovar, from the Pasuk we saw, Daber Dovar. So from this we learn, Dibur Aser, Hirhur Muter, that speech is what's prohibited. But if a person thinks about his business matters, that would be allowed. The mere thinking about it, how much he needs to expend on his property, on his fields, that one could do. One could think. The Gemara continues, Bishlamo Kuluchayi means all the examples that were featured in the Pasuk, and the Gemara explained, we Lechai means good, we understand them. Elo Shaluya, Ey Luchucho, Shal Shabbos Ki Lucho Shalchol Mahi. What does that mean, that the way you walk on Shabbos should be unlike the way you walk during the weekdays? You can see we have triangles that appear, that 1 and 2, they're numbered. Numbering appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. And on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh, the structural note we've indicated, Shinui Tsuras Alicha B'Shabbos. We're dealing with the change of the way one walks on Shabbos from the way he walks during the weekdays. So the Gemara is asking, what do you mean by that? The answer, Ki Hod Yomar Rav Huna Omar Rav. As Rav Huna says in the name of Ravi, Amri Le Omar Rabbi Abba Omar Rav Huna. Another version of the names is Rabbi Abba in the name of Rav Huna. Hoy Mahalech B'Shabbos U'Pog B'Amas Samayim. A person, let us say, was walking on Shabbos and he met up with a ditch of water, an Amas Samayim, a stream or a ditch of water. Im Yochol Aniach Es Raglo Rishona Kodem Sheta'akir Shniya Muter. If he can step across this ditch by picking up one foot and stepping over the ditch while the other foot was still in place, in other words, he's stepping over it as opposed to jumping running over it. Running jump would not be allowed. So if he can step over it, muter v'imlav, if it's wide such that he cannot step over it, at least at that point it's too wide, so he's not allowed to jump over it. Maskif lo Rava. Rava asks on what we just learned, Heshi Levid, well, so what should this person do? Lekev means go around it. Well, komafish bilucho, you're adding to his walking. Now, don't forget, it's Shabbos. We're trying to reduce the amount of trouble a person puts himself to. So if you're telling him he can't jump over it, so what's he supposed to do? Walk around? Find a spot that he can walk over it, but that means that he's going to have to walk more. Le'aver, to walk. Are you telling him that he should wade through it? He should walk right through it? And through the water, zimnin the misfisin money, mayo, v'asi lidei schita. his clothing might get soiled or soaking wet in the water, and he'll come to wring it out. Schita is forbidden on Shabbos. Ela, rather, Baha, in this case, where you have a stream that's too wide just to step over it, and all you can do is jump over it, so Kevon Delo Efshir, since he has no other option, Shapir Domi, it's okay for him to jump over it. So then, where do we see a case of change of walking? Elo Kedebo Mine Rebbe, may Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yossi. As Rebbe once asked of Rebbe Shmuel, Mahu Lifsoa Psia Gasa B'Shabbos, can one take large steps, giant steps, on Shabbos? Amalei, so Rebbe Shmuel answers, V'chi b'choyl mi utra, is one allowed to do that even during the weekday? And you can notice on the side, we have a double underline featured under the Mivneh heading, V'chi b'choyl, etc. Hanhogat shalorak b'shabbos asur melagam b'chol ein la'sosom. You'll see the Gemara features behaviors that one should not do even during the weekdays. So Rabbi Shmuel says, as far as the psia gas is concerned, one should not do that even during a weekday. Shani Omer, the Gemara continues on the third wide line, I say, psia gasa neitelis echot michomesh meois mimor einov shel odom, that large steps impede or reduce one's eyesight by 1/500th. And in order to restore the lost, the diminished eyesight, one should drink from the Kiddush of Friday night. Is one allowed to eat dirt on Shabbos? The Rashi says, did they make a gzeirah, a prohibition against eating dirt in anticipation of your coming to prepare medicines? Apparently there's implied in this question is that there's some type of medicinal value in the eating of dirt. Amalei, Rabbi Shmuel responds, v'chi b'choil mi hutra, is eating dirt allowed even during the weekdays? Shani omer af b'chol osur mipnei shu'u malke. I say that it's also even during the weekdays because it is injurious. It can bring a person to sickness. And now the Gemara expounds on the issue of the eating of dirt. More specifically, the eating of dirt of Bovel. Omer Rabbi Ami, kol oifel me'afro shel Bovel, Aleph, ki'ilu oifel mi'psar avoisov, v'yesh omrim beiz, ki'ilu oifel shkotsum uramosim. One who eats from the dirt of Bovel, it's as if he's eating from the flesh of his forebears. This will become clearer in a minute. And some say it's as if he's eating shkotsim ramosim, little crawling creatures. Dichtiv, the posuk in the context of the flood of the time of Noah says, Vayimach es kol hayikum. All of the inhabitants of the world dissolved into the ground. Omar Reish Lakish, Lomo Nikro Shmo Shinor. Why is Bovel also known by the term Shinor? You find Shinor in the Torah. Shekol Mesei Mabul Ninaru Lasham. All of humanity that was killed in the flood, they floated and moved down to Bovel. Bovel is a country that's low-lying, it's a low-lying valley type country, and hence, as the waters receded, all mankind that was killed in the flood, their bodies floated down to Bovel. Omar, and hence the word Shinor is Ninaru, has to do with movement or floating over to that place. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Lama Nikro Shmo Metzula. Why is Bovel also referred to by the term Metzula? Metzula also means depths. Shekol Mesei Mabul Nitztalalu L'sham. All the ones that were killed in the Mabul, in the great flood, they sunk over there. In modern Hebrew, the word tzoleil or tzolelan is associated with diving. So it has to do with the depths, and hence Bovel is referred to by the term Metsula as well. So we explained, you can see with the markings, we had originally a circled Aleph and Beis. The Aleph featured Oichel Mibsar Avoisov, and then the Aleph over Reish Lakish's name was a means of explaining that. Why, if you eat the dirt of Bovel, is it like you're eating your forebears? Because during the flood, all of humanity that died, their bodies ended up in Bovel. So eating the dirt of Bovel, you're in effect eating dirt that contains the bodies of one's forebears. Now we have a base. This corresponds to the base we had just three lines above. This is a quote. V'yesh omrim kilu oichel shkotzim uramosim. Eating the dirt of Bovel is as if he's eating shkotzim urmosim. You'll have to also pay attention. We have a little one over here. This will become clearer as we go on in the Gemara. The Gemara asks, v'havadai is mechuye ismachu. The shkotzim urmosim, they definitely decomposed, and they did not become dirt. This is in contrast to the Basar Avoisov, where human beings in their decomposition are associated with their turning to dirt. As the Pasuk says, man comes from dirt and in his death he returns to the dirt. That's true with regard to Basar Avoisov, but as far as the Shkotzim Ramosim, they Ismechuyeh would mean they totally melted and none, they are not left in the same way. So, Ella, rather, why? What is meant then by eating the dirt of Bovel? It's like you're eating shkotz from us. And what did that phrase mean? Ella, kevon de malki, since the dirt is injurious, gozru bei rabbonon. The rabbonon restricted the eating of it and said, don't eat it. It's like you're eating the shkotz from us, meaning just like the eating of shkotz from us creatures is forbidden, so too the eating of the dirt of Bovel, which is injurious, is forbidden. And to illustrate how the eating of dirt could result in a health problem, Dohahu Gavra, there was a man, Dohahal Gargishta, who ate a clump of dirt or clay from the ground, the Ohal Tachli. And he then, after eating this clay or dirt, he then ate tachli, a type of vegetation. And apparently this vegetation in his system took root in the dirt that was there. The kodchule tachli, belibe, and the tachli vegetation started to grow inside of him. And it touched or pierced his heart, umis, and he died. So you can see the problem in eating dirt. We continue now with a series of Rebbe Lozer drushes. You can see we have quite a few diamonds, and on the side of the Gemara under our Nosei Mivne heading, we've explained drushes she Rebbe Lozer al psukim b'megilas rus uma shekoshu eleho. We'll see a number of drushes of Rebbe Lozer featuring psukim from Sefer Rus and other matters that are related to her. And as we pointed out, just scan the page, and you can see quite a few of these diamonds takes it down to the lower part of the page. So the Gemara. Vatelech vatavo. Let's read again. Verochatzt vosacht v'samt simlosayach. The posuk in Perek Gimel is where Rus is instructed to wash herself and anoint herself and place clothing on herself. Simlosayach. Now, if you just look at the pasuk and translate it very literally, it seems kind of odd. You have here Rus is being addressed and told to put on her clothing. So would you think for a second that she's standing unclothed in the presence of the speaker, the one who's speaking to her? Therefore, that's unreasonable. Therefore, what does it mean when Rus is instructed to put on her dress? V'samt simlosayach. What is meant by that? Omer b'lozer, elu begodim shel Shabbos. This is a reference to she was being told to change her clothing to put on Shabbos clothing.
Tein l'chochom v'yech kam od. This is a pasuk from Mishlei, which translates as give a word or give something to the wise man, and he will increase, and there will be increased wisdom. We'll see how that applies as we continue. Omer Blazer Zu, number one, Rusa Moavia, two, Ushmuel Haramasi. This idea of give something to the Chacham, to the wise person, and he will increase the wisdom, can be illustrated by these two characters, Rus and Shmuel. Shmuel Haramasi is Shmuel, the great prophet Shmuel. Ramasi, he was from Roma, that was his place. And as you can see, the numbers that we have encircled are now followed by numbers and dashed underlined names. Rus, number one, is over here, and two lines later in the middle of the line, you'll see where we explain Shmuel and his fulfillment of this pasuk. The Gemara, Rus, what do we mean by Rus? That tein l'chochem v'yech kam oid. The Ilu Naomi Karmel Law, Naomi instructed her for Achatz, Vesach, Vesamsim Losayach, Olayach, Vyaradita Goren. Put on your, clean yourself up, decorate yourself, put on your nice dress, and then go to the granary. Now, going to the granary, the Goren is a place where there were other individuals. So v'ilu b'didok siv, when it comes to Rus herself, it says v'teret ha-goren, first she went to the goren, to the granary, v'hodar, and then v'tas k'chol asher tzivso chamoso, she then did everything that Naomi, her mother-in-law, told her to do. Chamoso is her mother-in-law. Rashi explains a little bit more. V'tered ha-goren, v'hodar v'tas, Rashi says, Shom sochav alofsho smolos nos, there in the goren she dressed herself up, shelo yivkeshu bo kishi mikushetes v'yomu zonahi, that she should not create the impression that by being outdoors all dressed up that she's going to the goren for an act of immodesty, of immorality. To appreciate this passage a little bit more, background would be of great benefit. Naomi was encouraging Rus, or instructing Rus, to go to the goren, to the granary, to meet up with Boaz. And the ultimate intention was for them to marry. And that's accomplished by them being together as man and wife. So you have to imagine here that Naomi had very pure intentions in her instructing Ruth to adorn herself, to clean herself, to get all ready, and we can say get all dolled up. However, Ruth figured that if she were to get all ready before getting to the goren, the granary, where Boaz was working, threshing the grains at night, if she would approach the granary already dressed up, people would think that she is a harlot going there for immoral purposes. Therefore, before getting ready, she went first to the granary, and in the granary she got herself all dressed up so she wouldn't create a false impression or give a wrong impression to people that may see her outdoors, thinking that she was going for immoral purposes. Let's continue in the Gemara. Number two, Shmuel. What's the case of Shmuel? The Elu Eli Ka'amale. Shmuel was a boy at this point in time, and Eli was the Kohen Gadol, and Shmuel was being hosted by Eli in the Mishkan area. And Eli told Shmuel, Shmuel, who had received, let's say, heavenly communication, and Eli said to Shmuel, "The Ilu Eli Komale Shav V'Hoy Mikro Elecha, go back to sleep, go lie down, and if you are summoned, of course, by the heavenly voice, the Omarta Daber Hashem Ki Shomea Avdecha, and then say, speak, Almighty, because I, your servant, am hearing you." So Eli's instruction was to Shmuel, tell the voice, Daber Hashem, speak, Almighty. But when the incident actually transpired with regard to Shmuel himself, it said, regarding Shmuel himself, it says, in Pasuk Yud, after he had received the instructions from Eli in Pasuk Tes, it says, Vayavo Hashem, Vayisyatse, Vayikrop, Kepam, Befam, Shmuel, Shmuel. And the Almighty appeared, and he called, as he did in the past, Shmuel, Shmuel, Vayomer Shmuel Daber, Ki Shomea Avdecha, Velo Amar Daber Hashem. Shmuel's response upon hearing the voice was, speak. And he didn't say, speak Hashem, Almighty speak. And the element of added wisdom over here is that even though Eli said to him, say, Daber Hashem, Shmuel didn't want to do that because maybe it wasn't Hashem speaking to him. So he didn't want to mention the name of Hashem for no reason. That's a sign of the added chokhmah that Shmuel added to this event. The Gemara continues. We go back to Rus. This is from Rus Perek Beis Posa Gimel, Vatelech Vatovo Vatlaket Basodeh. She went and gathered grains from the field. Omar Rabbi Elozer, Shehocha Ubasa Hocha Ubasa. The pasuk that says she went and came indicates she went and came Ad Shemotzu B'nei Odom HaMehugonim Leilechi Mohem. She didn't go immediately, but checked out who else was going there. She didn't go to the field until she found proper harvesters to go with. Vayomer Boaz Lenaro Hanitzov Al HaKotzrim Lemi Hanara Azos. Boaz asked his servant, who was in charge of the harvesters, and he asked, "Who is this girl? Who is this young woman?" Is it the way of Boaz? Boaz was in fact a leader of the Jewish people, was a prominent, pious individual. Is it characteristic of him to ask about girls? And Rashi points out that asking about girls would indicate that he was gazing upon them, and that's certainly out of character. So what happened here? What prompted Boaz to ask about her? Of course, he was asking about Rus, but what prompted it? There will be two pshatim, and we've numbered them one and two as we go on in the Gemara. Omar Rebelozer, Devar Chochma Ro'oba, and it's explained the term Devar Chochma, which means an element of wisdom, also means an element of halacha. He saw this girl following proper halachic procedure. What did he see? Shnei shibolim lokta, shlosha shibolim eina lokta. There is a tithe that's left for the poor, known as leket. And that means that after the harvesters, who were, the hired hands of the owner, in this case Boaz, finished harvesting, if there fell away two sheaves of grain and left on the floor, that's called leket, and that must be left for the poor. The owner cannot go back and collect those. But if three fell as the harvesting was taking place, that is allowed to, that remains the owner, under the ownership of the in this case Boaz, and the poor are not allowed to take three that are together. So he noticed that she was taking only sheaves of grain, two, not three. So she was practicing proper halachic procedure. Number two, b'masni sotona dvar tzniyus roba. What drew his attention to her was her modest behavior. Omdos me'umod, noflos miyushav. Another halacha of leket is that if a harvester walked by if he walked by standing grains and didn't cut them, you can have a situation of two standing grains also being considered shikha. So this point is saying that the standing grains she would take while in a standing position. Grains that fell over, she would sit down on the ground and take them. In other words, she wouldn't remain standing and bend over to pick them from the floor. Rather, she would sit on the floor, maybe crouch down very low in a seated position to take them, pick them up from the ground. Of course, that's a much more modest behavior pattern than bending over to pick up that which is on the floor, especially when you're dealing with a woman. The Gemara continues, V'cho sidbokin im narosai. Here you have Boaz speaking to Rus and telling her to be together with his hired hands, the youth that are his hired hands. V'chi darko shel Boaz ledaber im hanoshim. Is it characteristic of Boaz to engage in conversation with strange women? Omar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar explains what was the basis or the background of his having a conversation with her. Kevan de Choza, when he saw or became aware of Atishak Orpo Lechamoysev Rus Dovka Ba, Omar Shori Lidbuki Ba. He knew the story of Orpa, the other daughter-in-law of Naomi, who basically kissed her goodbye, but Rus was insistent on cleaving unto Naomi and to join the ranks of the Jewish people. When he became aware of that, Omar, so Boaz said, Shari l'idbuki ba, it's permitted to cleave unto her. And you can see in the pasuk that we quoted, he was saying, V'cho sidbokin im narosai, and continue to cleave unto us. The background for this section of Gemara that we just learned would involve realizing that Rus came from the Moav people, and the Moav people, you find the Torah banning Jewish people from marrying Moav people from that nation. But we also know that restriction is to the Moabite men and not to the Moabite women. So in this very short piece of Gemara, there is very likely a reference to that particular halacha, that it's allowed to, she being a woman from the Moab people, is one who is allowed to join the ranks of the Jewish people, as opposed to the men folk from that nation. The Gemara continues, Vayomer lo Boaz, le'es oichel, gishi halom. Omar Rabbi Elazar, remez romaz lo, in his speech to her, in his speaking to her, he said, gishi halom, he was hinting something prophetically. Asido malchus beis David lo seis mimech, the kingdom of the Davidic kingdom will emerge from you. Dichtiv Bey, regarding David, the Pasuk says, Halom, Shinemar Vayovoi, Hamelch David Vayeshev, Lifnei Hashem, Vayomer Mi Onochi Hashem, Adoni, Hashem, Umi Beisi, Ki Havi Osani Ad Halom. In his expression of humility, David says, Who am I, and who is my family that you brought me forth till this point? But the word halom is prominent, and we've dashed underline that. So David uses the word halom, and Boaz, in speaking to her, used the word goshi halom. So the word comparison shows you that Rus is the progenitor of King David. The pasuk says, "V'tovalt peitech b'chometz." And you'll dip your bread in vinegar. Omer Rabbi Elazar, mikan shechometz yofel l'shrav. From here, you see that that vinegar is good in heat. Shrav is hot weather, so vinegar is helpful in hot weather. Omer Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Omer remez romaz lo asido ben lotzeis mimech shemaisav koshin kechometz. Rav Shmuel takes a negative approach to this pasuk and says that he was hinting to her that there will emerge a descendant from you whose behavior is as acrid or as disdainful as vinegar is. Umanu, and who is that a reference to? Menashe. Menashe was a descendant from King David. He was the son of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who was a Menashe was a problematic individual by way of his meisim, his behavior, his association with idolatry, etc. Vateshev mitzad hakoitzrim. The pasuk says, and she sat off to the side of the harvesters. Omer Belozer, mitzad hakoitzrim velo besoch hakoitzrim. To the side of them and not in their midst. And what we want to add to this is that she was off to one side. Boaz was in the middle. Let's see the Rashi for more accuracy on this. Mitzada kotsim kol ha-kotsim hifsiku beino leveino velo hoshiva besocham o etzlo. In other words, the harvesters served as an interposition, a block between himself and Rus. Now, what's the point of this separation idea of him being separated from her? So, Remez Roma's law, a hint is being made. She'asida malchus beis David shetischalek, that in the future the divinic dynasty that will descend forth from her, there will be a split in the kingdom. This really is a reference to in the time of Rehavam, the son of Shlomo, the grandson of David. The kingdom of Israel split into the southern kingdom, which was continued to be ruled by the descendants of David, and the northern kingdom, the first king of which was Yeravam ben Nevat. The pasuk says, "Vayitzbot lo koli vatochal." And it goes on to say, "Vatisba vatosar." He handed her some roasted grains. She ate. She was satisfied, and there was left over. Omer Rebelozer vatochal. And what we do in this drosha is we take three words, vatochal, vatisba, vatosar, and darshan them. So vatochal bimei David. The idea of having what to eat is characteristic of David's realm. Vatisba. Disba is satisfaction, or in this case, wealth. That's bimei Shlomo, vatosar, and there was even leftover, meaning additional wealth, bimei Chizkiyah. And Rashi points out that David, Shlomo, Chizkiyah were kings concerning whom the pasuk says there was wealth. The wealth was a result of all other kings of the world bringing gifts to them. The Gemara continues, V'ika di'amri, another version of the drasha here, V'tochal bimei David uvimei Shlomo, V'tisba bimei Chizkiyah, V'tosar bimei Rebbe. And Rebbe was many generations later, but also a descendant from Beis David, and who traces back to Rus. Di'omar mar, Ahurei the Rebbe, the person appointed over the horses of Rebbe, Hava Osir Mishover Malka, was wealthier than Shover Malka, than the Persian king, showing the extensive wealth that was present in Rebbe and his household. B'masnisa Tana, we have a third drasha concerning these three words, Vatocha Bolam Hazeh, Vatisba Li Moisa Moshiach, Vatosar Leosid Lavo, reference to three different time periods, this world and the times of the Moshiach and the world to come. There is now a pasuk, and it's quoted over here because we saw drushes made by Rebbe Lozer. So we have another drusha. Rashi mentions that since we had drushes by Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shmuel Nachmani, so we have this drusha too, which is not related to Rus, but is explained by these different opinions. The names, these names already we've seen. So we have a pasuk from Yeshaya Perek Yud Pasuk Tezayin. The context of this pasuk is the downfall of the army of Sanherib, who was the king of Assyria, who came to conquer and capture Jerusalem after his conquest of the rest of Israel. There was a miraculous event that in one night the angel of Hashem killed off all of the soldiers, and there were millions of soldiers there, and he killed off, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, he killed off all of the generals and that were running the army, 185,000 of them. And the Gemara there reports that the smallest band under any one of those leaders was 2,000 men. So, well, there were many casualties in this miraculous vanquishing of Sanherib's army. And it says there that the pasuk makes reference to their being burnt up. What do we mean by being burnt up? So the pasuk says, "Vatachas kevodo yekad yekoid ki koid eish." Amar Rabbi Yochanan, "Vatachas kevodo velo kevodo mamish." The burning was under kevodo, but not the kevodo itself. What does that mean? Rabbi Yochanan tamei, Rabbi Yochanan kori lemoni mechabdusi. We saw this quote before. Rabbi Yochanan referred to his clothing as his source of honor, mechabdusai. And we saw this quoted at the very bottom of Amud Aleph. So what happened, according to Rabbi Yochanan? The burning took place under their clothing, but not their clothing itself. So that would mean, according to Rabbi Yochanan, that the clothing remained intact, but their bodies were burnt up. The next Rasha, or next opinion, we should say, is Rabbi Lozer Omer, "V'tachas kevodo, tachas kevodoi mamish." Now, the word kevodo, or the word tachas, according to Rabbi Lozer, means in exchange for. Now, so what does that mean? Rabbi Lozer doesn't call his clothing by the term mechabdusai. Therefore, the word kevodo, according to Rabbi Lozer, is their body. So it means then that their bodies were burnt up. And we can look in Rashi to appreciate these opinions a little more by looking at the first wide line under the Rashi. Verbalozer mashmalei tachas loshen chalifin, in exchange for, kamo yishalim tachas hashor, paid, you pay instead of, in place of the ox, as the pasuk in Shmos says. Mishum, verbalozer lo kor lemone mechabduse. Rabbi Lozer doesn't refer to his clothing by the term mechabdusei. Lakach al korcha kavodo is gufo. Vahochi komar kavodo mamish yisoreif. V'tachtov ye efer usreifas usreifa ki kud ish. Meaning, instead of where the body was, there will now be ash. That's tachas kavodo, in the place of, in to replace the kavodo, the body, there will be ashThe Gemara continues, Reb Shmuel Bar Nachman Yomar Tachas Kevodo means Kisrefas B'nei Aharon, like the burning of the sons of Aaron. The sons of Aaron, as is featured in the Chumash, brought into the Mishkan an Eish Zora, and they were punished by their innards being burnt out. In other words, their bodies remained intact. Ma lahalan srefas neshama v'guf kayam. Just like over there, the neshama, literally the soul, but it's an internal burning, but the bodies remained intact. Afkan srefas neshama v'guf kayam. So too with the soldiers of Sanherib, their innards were burnt out, but their bodies remained intact. So we look at the Rashi, second line from the bottom, for Bishmuel Mashmalei, that's Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, understands tachas. Rabbi Yochanan uses the word tachas, meaning underneath, like Rabbi Yochanan uses the word ukvodo krebelozer, and the word kvodo means body. So under the body. Hilkoch,
Kro krob Yochanan Midrash, v'tachas kevodo, nisraf, v'lo kevodo mamish. The pasuk, therefore, as according to Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni, is darshened like Rabbi Yochanan, meaning underneath the kvodo was burnt. Now, underneath the kvodo, and not the kvodo mamish. Vai kvodo gufohu. The kvodo means the body. So, under the body was burnt. Vilkach kisrefus bnei Aaron, srefus neshama v'guf kayam. Kinamir Sanhedrin ben Arba Mises. In Perek Arba Mises, this was featured. So, you have these different opinions in how to darshan the pasuk of tachas kvodo yekad kikod, Rabbi Yochanan saying the bodies were burnt but the clothing remained intact. According to Rabbi Lozer, the bodies were also burnt, but he comes to it with a different word approach. And Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni has his opinion that the bodies as well as the clothing remained intact, the innards were burnt out. The Gemara continues at the bottom line. Omer of Acha bar Abba, Omer of Yochanan, Minayin l'shinuyah begodim min haTorah. From where do we know that the change of clothing is a sign of honor? In other words, like we were saying before, changing from weekday clothing to Shabbos clothing, that it's a sign of honor to have a change of clothing. So the Pos Shenemar, it says in the context of Hotzoas Adeshin. This is the top line of Kuf Yudalit Omen Aleph. So the Gemara quotes a pasuk from the removal of the ash from the Mizbeach that took place every morning in the Beis HaMikdash. It says there that the Kohen who was charged with removing the ash, Uposhad es begodav velovash begodam achirim, that after he removed the ash, and you can imagine there was a ash by its nature is a dirty substance, and one who's handling it will soil his garments. The Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel limda Torah derech eretz. The Torah in this pasuk where it says he shall remove his clothing that he used for removal of ash and put on other clothing for the continued service in the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah is teaching us a proper way of behavior. That's limda Torah derech eretz, proper behavior. Begonim shebishibah and kedei l'rabo, the clothing you were wearing while literally cooking up the pots. Cooking pots involves splatter and fats and all kinds of other substances that soil garments. If one was cooking clothing for his master, al himzo ben kois l'rabo, don't wear the same clothing when serving your master his cup of wine, or when you're pouring for him his cup of wine, when you're face to face with him. So you're supposed to change your clothing. So you see this element of the idea of change of clothing as a sign of respect. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.